Well, hey, welcome. This is Dave. I had a little trouble getting in. I hope none of you did. First of all, the couple of people who were going to do a case vignette for a Coach the Coach that we did last time were not able to make it. They had emergencies, seemingly what we've had a bunch of in the last year or so. So we have a couple of possibilities for either case vignettes you'd like to talk about and do a Coach the Coach with me, or simply challenges and topics. But first, so that's to be in the hopper and to think about. So first, let's do a check-in, updates from each of you. What do you got? Who's here? I don't have my dashboard in front of me. So if you'll announce and let me know you're here and what's going on. I'm eager to hear from you.
Hi, David. This is Carol Huff.
Hey, Carol. How are you?
It's been a while since I've been on a call, but...
What are you up to? How many books have you written since we've last talked in this format?
Don't I wish.
Well, bring us up to date. I know you're doing something prolific. What's going on?
I am working on creating a webinar designed for caregivers, family caregivers who have lost their loved one, finding purpose beyond the loss. And it's mostly done. I'm still working on fine-tuning it.
Okay.
I'm
What's your distribution? Who will this be viewed by or participation with?
Well, that's still up in the air, Dave.
Okay. Okay.
I believe it would work well. I'm in a situation where, or in a position where, my older son, who lives in West Texas, takes care of a lot of geriatric, senior patients.
Okay.
And they have been family caregivers. And have, you know, lost their loved one. And so I'm thinking that, you know, within some of the medical community is possibly a good place to start.
Super. And you will have your this is a margin note. Your son, by the way, is the one in the family who has since living in Texas. But that's not the topic for our discussion. Do you have a way that someone can contact you or download an outline to have your contact information when they view the webinar?
Yes, I do.
Great. Perfect. That's great.
Okay. So we're working on that to make it a little easier.
Okay. Excellent. That sounds great. And you have some inroads and some sweet spots about where you go and who the gatekeepers are, who the referral potentially.
I think so. The business coach who I'm working with also has a lot of contacts and is talking to me about, you know, preparing me how to market and to whom to market. So I've got some assistance there.
That's great. That's a super idea, and that can be a terrific evergreen offering to have with ways to contact you and a benefit in a number of ways. So that's super. That's a great idea.
Thank you, sir. I'm with you. I'm anxious to hear what everybody else is up to as well.
Okay. Also, you may want to think about what I did in the last agreement that I made to appear, and it's like a podcast, but it's a video conference by a group that I consult to am listed on, is I have done a webinar that I will also be live at the beginning and the end, and that really maximizes, I think, the benefit. Some groups prefer a live interview or a presentation, but it's something that you could leverage your time and impact if you have a presentation, if you show up at the beginning and the end to do a live discussion. It can really offer ways to get a lot of information, especially if there's a detailed outline. In fact, I'm going to share that webinar with this group very shortly.
Good.
It's a webinar on... peak performance in the mind and brain sciences of peak performance. It's a short webinar, 30, 35 minutes, which is unusual for me, being accused of having every sentence a minimum of 275 words. So, but those are some great ideas. Carol, thank you for sharing that and for doing that.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Dave.
Did you have a professional person put the webinar together, or did you craft it yourself?
I'm actually, he's putting it together. He's leading me through how to prepare it. We're working on the PowerPoint and the content that goes with it. We're, like I said, we're about two-thirds, three-fourths of the way through it, and then it just has to be fine-tuned.
That's great. That's great. And this is for future reference. If any of you happen to like this webinar and the kind of the visuals format or the playbooks and the webinars on the new offering at neuromentorinstitute.com, I'll be happy to share the guy who did my putting it all together. I simply recorded the webinar, gave him the question outlines, and he did everything else from the playbooks to the webinars. He charges $40 an hour, and he's absolutely terrific. So I'll be happy to share that with anybody who's interested. Lisa, who's one of our own, did the website, and she is beyond super, and I would highly recommend her, as I know one or two of you have already worked with her. She is absolutely terrific. She's presented in our group before for presence intelligence, which she's trademarked as a benefit. And if she can make my stuff look pretty and intelligent, she can do a lot of stuff. Imagine what she can do with your stuff, you know? Great. Thank you. Go ahead, Carol.
All right.
Sorry.
Thank you. Oh, that's okay. I was going to say, that's right about now all that I've got just to share, but glad to listen.
But then there's always next week, okay? That's great. Thank you, Carol. Okay.
Yes.
Again, if you tuned in a minute late, the couple of people who were going to do case vignettes and a coach the coach both had last minute conflicts, so that's open. So if anybody would like to do a coach the coach with me for a brief time, or simply talk about challenges, issues, or have something to present, I'd welcome that. So think about that. Right now, does anyone want to do a brief coach the coach with me at a later point after we continue the check-ins and the updates? All right, then, think about it. Who else? I'm interested. We're interested to hear what you guys are up to. It's always inspiring. Who's next?
I have somebody's here.
I have a couple of questions that have been sent in to be sure that they're in the hopper for us to discuss, but I want to wait and do WINS progress notes check-ins as we begin. Who's next? They don't have to be huge. Just say hi. Anyone?
This is Carol again. Do you think maybe they didn't get the corrected date on this? Because I know I got the corrected date.
Okay. That's possible. The correct date was in the subject line, although it was from last year, so they wouldn't be misinformed in that direction. I missed one date in that, so we'll carry on. If I don't have, as I said, I don't have my dashboard, so I don't know who how many people are on. There were a number of people on when I signed on and had a little trouble signing on, so I hope we're not having trouble signing on. I'll begin with some of the questions and issues that were highlighted to talk about, but a final call Any wins, progress notes, updates from anyone? Okay. One thing that was asked in a couple of different ways is about how to practically use the roadmap system in coaching and how to even think about the metaphor of story. So let me just address that in the best way I can. Then I'm interested in comments or thoughts about that. The roadmap as well as the story, one is a macro system, one is a metaphor. Those are ours to use in training and as coaches, because if we talk about the client's story with a client, they don't have a story. That's the way things are. This is our metaphor to help us organize and put together the story components of each story and each coaching session, the challenge, the development, the resolution. So it's our metaphor to help us understand the aspects of what can be most useful to a client to look at what's working, what's not, how to change, what to keep, what to let go. And for the roadmap, that's simply a way to deconstruct the algorithms of how someone puts together a story and for us to look at what point or in what way would it be helpful for us to collaborate, to tweak, or to change, or to develop a new story. And as we've talked many times, an unconscious operating system is in place 90 to 95% of the time. So what that means is that we don't have to do a deep dive. We don't have to go to the cellars of the unconscious for this reason. Every algorithm will be revealed in thought, feeling, and behavior. All of the patterns, attachment, emotional, behavioral, reveal important configurations. So what? Let me ask for those of you who have an open mic, if you, until you get ready to jump in or comment, if you would put it on mute because it's picking up a little bit of the background noise. And don't forget to go unmute, *6, when you're ready. So every algorithm is going to be revealed in present thought, feeling, and behavior. It's part of the process that comes alive. Our attachment, emotional behavior patterns will show what's important and what's important from that operating system in a lively, here and now way. And we don't bother it until it bothers the client. So we can examine and evaluate then what doesn't work and really highlight what does work. So to say that slightly differently, neuroscience is simply understanding the process of thinking and deciding rather than a body of knowledge. So two most important aspects of how we're thinking about, we're back to the basics here, conversation with a client. Focus and framing. Here's what we know, and you guys know this. You've heard this from me so many times. Focus is about two things: an optimum mindset for whatever task it is. And what focus does is it helps you to know what all to disregard. It's like a map. A map helps you know all the stuff to not pay attention to. You know, I'm going to go from here to Bryan College Station. I don't have to pay attention to anything else other than that route. So here's an example. Some of you have heard me say this before about the power of focus, but it kind of illustrates it. A few years ago, my wife gifted me, and her, by the way, too, with a 3-day BMW racing school experience. For 3 days, we did all kinds of BMWs at their racing track in Greenville, South Carolina, with pro racers. And it was an amazing experience. And one thing really, really stuck out because it just illustrated what we're talking about. They talked about, for example, when you're going through a turn at very high speed, always focus on exactly where you're going to go next. Never look at an obstacle, because your brain follows your eyes. If you look at an obstacle, you're going to engage that obstacle. And at high speed, that's serious. That's exactly what we do in coaching. We look at a focus of right now and to help someone create a system. Everybody has the same goal or similar goals. Focusing on a goal is not going to be helpful. Maybe it is to know where you're going, but to focus on a system, that's what we do. So that your client, when they hang up the phone or log off the video conference with you, they know what to do next. And it's not, probably not going to the mall, which is a distant memory, or jogging, but it's doing exactly what's next when they're in that mindset. So our brains follow our eyes, even successful turns at very high speeds. So a focus on avoiding the obstacle, you'll regularly hit it or engage it. So focus is about flow, self-regulating, enter and sustain an optimum state, mindset, for the task. And that makes and this is more than an answer to the couple of questions that are in this ballpark, but interrupt me at any time. If any of you have questions or additions or better illustrations, I'm very eager to hear that. That means a selective focus is really important, because more information, more patterns in working memory is not going to help. More information does not help. We know how much focus helps. An example of specific focus, Steph Curry. Right now, best free throw shooter in the NBA, he focuses on the three closest hooks on the rim when he shoots a free throw. So more information is not going to enable people to change or perform better. Your solutions to your issue, you guys know this, is not going to enhance performance. So the questions to the client, would you benefit and can you change the outcome? That gets it to the focus of what the client can do. The other part besides focus and relating more to the second question, besides focus, it's framework. Now, we've talked about this before. We talked about this a bit last time, because what a framework, framing is useful because it boots up a particular mindset. And this is exactly what we do in coaching, from problem to possibility. And as we've also discussed, an experience of anxiety, brain doesn't know the difference between anxiety and excitement. So the framing determines how you proceed. If you see it as excitement or challenge or opportunity, then you're engaged. What a framework does is also what neuroscientists call having a schema. It's a way to encode new information that helps tremendously with the process. Here's the simplest study that I've run across, and I'm always for it, believe it or not. Always trying to find simple words, simple explanation. It's a study about doing laundry. People are given a number of things to remember to see how many words they can remember after 1 minute has passed. Half the group was given this list of words, and the words varied from 6 to 12, different groups. Outcomes the same, so that's why the number's not important. Other group was told, this is a group of words that has to do with doing laundry. The people who were told the schema, how to organize, this has to do with doing laundry. they remembered exactly twice as many of the words as the group who didn't. When the first group were told after the fact that, oh, by the way, this group of words had to do with doing laundry, they remembered no better than they did before they were told that. So it helps at the beginning to organize, to have a concept. That's what story does. It's a container, a way of looking at relationships, at meaning, at purpose. The prefrontal cortex uses schemas as guide to what to focus on and the framework of how to put together and remember an experience or information. So your schema for organizing, let's say an interview, can help others better remember important aspects to focus on and the framework of how to put together what follows and what unfolds. So those are important aspects, I think, for what we do as coaches. Here's something else relating to a comment that was made and a request for just a bit of information on that. And thanks for this, Kip. Here's a study that I ran across that I thought really relates exactly to what we do. So the study of college professors who serve as mentors, and the study that gives the answer. The study is called "Why Do Only Some Events Cause Learning During Human Tutoring?" Here's what they found among college professors who do tutoring in a variety of students, variety of subjects. When the student reaches an impasse when they're ready to receive input, that's when it has the most effectiveness. At the time the impasse occurred, whenever the mentor functions for the student, or does it too quickly, or provides an answer, or here's what I would have done, it doesn't work nearly as well. Success occurs at the point of stalling or failure. Growth occurs when resistance is experienced and learning possibilities are open. That applies from academic to athletics to coaching. And it's a great example, a great study for why we don't run in plays or make big and bold suggestions or tell somebody what we did or how they ought to be doing it. So those are all things that I wanted to add based on the input, the questions, and see where we are with that. Thoughts or questions or anything about anything at all that I mentioned?
How did I do that before?
I'm sorry, say that again. I didn't quite hear.
Hi, this is Lynn here.
Wait, welcome. How are you? Go ahead. Would you repeat, please? Welcome. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you.
Super.
What I have a question on is I find that when you're coaching, there's different aspects of coaching. Some like to just do the blank slate, which is fine, but others, some people like to advise. In a situation where the client doesn't know where to go next and the coach would advise them, which is best for the results, which you just explained is usually best coming from the client to make the decision. But if they're really stuck, do you offer options or not? It's best not to.
It depends on if you're taking the ICF exam. If you're taking the ICF exam at the first level, you only ask powerful questions, and I'll deny that I told you anything differently. Now, practically, if you don't want your kids to be really skinny, you'll do a lot more than that. Remember from the training, it's in the curriculum. There are some things like 8 or 9 things that we do as mentor coaches that are in addition to asking powerful questions. And let me elaborate that just a little bit and give you the context for that. You will probably remember it, but I mentioned this before, but I want to provide a context. I was asked, basically, people who were not bold enough to ask that question, a group of coaches who had been together for 5 years. They were very successful, and they had all trained at a particular institute, not CTA, and because of confidentiality, I won't say where, but they had all trained pretty much, they had all trained at the same place. And they had met together on a monthly basis to go over stuff and to go over cases and all kind of things. So they contacted me. I knew two or three of the guys. They contacted me and asked if I would do a consultation with the group and do a case study with them. I said, sure, I love stuff like that. And they told me that one guy had been presenting and he was having some difficulty with a case, and they were kind of all stuck. So I asked them to take – I asked the coach to take process notes. He said, she said, and we'd go over it for a few minutes. And I joined, and we had some laughs, and then we listened to the process notes for about 5, 6, 7 minutes. And then I said, do you mind if I interrupt me? I said, I noticed that you only ask powerful questions. They're great questions, but they're only questions. And he said, yeah, that's what we were taught to do. And I said, is that really what you do and all that you do? And there was a silence. I let it run. He said, well, you know, that's what we were taught to do. But you ask, is that what? No, not really. I said, what else do you guys do? And they were kind of hemming and hawing and not admitting as if it were being recorded somehow. And I said, here, let me tell you 8 or 9 things that I think we do as mentor coaches in addition to asking powerful questions, because the idea is powerful questions are powerful because it aligns the energy field of the brain. It immediately moves into a particular focus and even mindset to engage. But it's a principle to not be rigidified as a rule. So here are some other principles. If the objective is helping the client get to the very best place possible and the most massive success that that client can have, possibly even beyond what they've imagined, because they can only imagine from their own system. So I went through, and I'll just do it very briefly here, and some of these are so obvious. Here are some things I think we do as mentor coaches. In addition to asking, we offer ideas and insights. You know, a client's afraid of not making enough money, fear's guide to desire, so we ask, well, how can you convert that fear into an intention, or what's the possibility? We strategize to achieve goals, and then that's smart goals. That's not a question, though. We explain. Sometimes something so simple like, a client says, the universe is conspiring against me to present obstacles as I get more successful. Well, a simple explanation is, well, I hear you're moving ahead. And by doing that, you engage obstacles in the road that you wouldn't experience otherwise. It's how you frame it that makes the difference. Sometimes we even suggest and advise. I heard a couple of sighs at that point. We listen for the part of the story that doesn't make sense or that's left out or incomplete. You know, think about all of the biases. The unconscious biases are by definition something that's not conscious. A blind spot is by definition something you can't see. Look at all of the beliefs, assumptions, biases that comprise and compose the 90 to 95%. Of that operating system. Whenever something gets in the way, that's when we engage it, because the client is showing us exactly what it's like to be him or her at that point. Sometimes we story bust. We hear maybe automatic or habitual behavior that persists even when it doesn't work. That's why I invoke my right, granted me already, to interrupt and say, hey, let's look at that. I hear you. sometimes we simply give information. We point to resources or information. Dave Meyer at CTA said, if a client doesn't know what an AMWA is, you can't coach it out of them. I mean, that's pretty simple. Sometimes we train and redirect. We may give a model of how to handle conflict, including communication skills. That is even more prominent the higher up, for example, the executive ladder you go. The people who are CEOs really need help in understanding their own dynamics, the dynamics of other people. Even professional athletic coaches really need help in understanding some basics, like how do you engage a player? You start with a question rather than instruction, and you're going to have participation instead of pushback, some fundamental things. We may give a model of how to do that, for example, or do a psychodrama. You be that person, I'll be. Another is we regulate states of mind. Which state works best for a particular task, or simply, if somebody's so upset, besides empathically resonating, would you like to do a brief mindfulness meditation so that you can make optimum use of this session? And finally, I think a very legitimate focus for a coaching session is when a client asks to brainstorm. Now, that doesn't mean I get to start superimposing my story, but I really want to know what specifically that client would like us to brainstorm about, so that when we throw stuff on the wall to see what sticks, there's a schema that is organized around what the client wants and needs and where they want to get to. You know, if you don't have a map, if you don't know where you're going, any map will do. So I want to have the same format, the same structure, the same schema of a session, but we're going to both throw ideas up to see what happens and to see what we can come up with together. Now, the people on that call started talking about how relieved they were that they could finally talk about what they really did with clients after 5 years rather than what they thought they should do or what they were only willing to admit, even to each other, even when they had a great working alliance together. So we can still maintain the principles of coaching. We focus on the client. The client is the point of reference to develop the client's story. We're a catalyst for that. We're not running in plays, telling the client how they ought to do things or telling them our story and hoping that they'll adapt it, but that story is their point of reference. Because, you know, what we know from coaching, people will commit to what they help create. And that's where we end. What do you commit to do before we meet again? But they've created the whole scenario, the beginning, middle, and end, the challenge, the development, the resolution of that story to be able to then engage that on their own, because the rest of the 23 hours and 7 days they're not talking with us, they're really doing it themselves, but they're downloading a model from our collaboration together that ideally will work and will sustain itself. And when they no longer need our input, then they've got that internalized, so they don't need us to meet with them on a weekly basis. Now, does that, I know that's way more than you asked. That sounds like one of my answers that I started out and then 15 minutes later I summarized. Does that really answer your question? Back to the simplicity and the elegance of your question, does that really address that?
Absolutely. It's perfect. It went way beyond what I thought it would be, and it's perfect. I appreciate that.
You forgot who you were talking to, so. No, that's great. That's an excellent question, and it's one that we all address each time, but when we have principles to guide us, not rules, like this group of guys, or like, oh, you only ask for, if we have principles to guide us, then we're engaging in a way that is really creative. Here's a way that I heard someone once describe a process that I think each of you have already gotten to, but I'll describe it from another perspective so that maybe just conceptualizing it can be helpful. This was back in the day when I was doing therapy and analysis. I worked with an abstract expressionist, an artist who wanted to quieten his demons, but he was afraid that if he did that, his creativity would languish or be stopped. What he found, of course, was that when all of him was going one direction, he was tremendously more creative, and he went from being a regional to an international, recognized artist. Here's what he taught me. He described what he did big stuff. So when he was at the canvas, he was standing up, waving his arm. He said, you know, when I go to the canvas and emote, and he was describing that was his term for the state of mind he was in. When I get to the canvas and emote, when I enter that performance zone, translated in my current terms, he said, I don't think about what I do. I don't think about what color, even though I've had 15 years of formal training, line drawing, anatomy, color, all that, and another 15, 16 years of experience doing this, there's no way I think about what I'm doing. Now, afterwards, I step back with you, and I can talk about, well, this came from a particular aspect of human anatomy. This color means he could deconstruct the entire thing, but he knew not to because he was in that performance flow. And that's where I know each of you have gotten to. You've looked at, we've done training, you've done other kinds of things, you've synthesized and integrated experience. So when you're with a client, you're not thinking about, what would Kruger say? You know, when I finished my residency and came and took position at Baylor and did some clinical work, the first few patients that I worked with, it was like, God, what would Herb Schlesinger say right now? He was my most esteemed senior training analyst to supervisor. It took me 2 or 3 months to get beyond that because it didn't matter. It was going to be my voice. So when you've gotten to this place, you're not deconstructing or thinking what you should say or thinking what's going to be the best. You're going to that canvas and emoting. You're in that performance flow. In fact, what we know now from professional players, and it's more vivid here, for a player, if they stop for even a nanosecond to think about something else, how they're performing, or focus on an opponent, causes a choke.
Yeah.
And they have to, if they're in an episodic deal, I've shared this with you before, one of my all-pro athletes in football, after every play, he would say to himself, whether good, bad, or indifferent, because the biggest challenge is when you do something really good, or if you do something really bad, it can color the next, few minutes or next play. And especially if you're left out, every play, good, bad, indifferent, he would say reset. And that was his combined mantra, the cue, the focus, physiology, and that word, and boom, he was set. He was in that performance state of mind, that flow, and sustained it, and then said reset again, and was immediately in the performance flow. That's why we want to get in a place where there's no interference. There's no yard people scheduled when we have a session with a client or a training or a discussion. There's nothing, I work in a home office here. I've disconnected my doorbell. I mean, nothing is going to interfere with that flow. So that's what we want to do so that it can all be what is a combination of knowledge, intuition, all of those years of training and experience, including coaching, in how we respond to this client at this moment for what's best for the client's story.
Yeah.
Thoughts, okay. Questions? So this is related to what I've been working on the last 3 years of the new NeuroMentor Institute Peak Performance training. To do your best, or even better, when it really matters the most, despite the pressure. So our role is to help the client achieve or sustain peak performance, whatever that is, whether it's in the boardroom, the athletic field, the artistic canvas, whatever, the operating room, whatever that is, to thrive when the stakes are highest and matter the most. Because sometimes a single instance can change a life or a career trajectory. Now, it's usually not as simple as, you know, sometimes an hour or two can change the rest of somebody's life, an interview with a board of directors, a search committee, or sitting for an exam for law or medical school. The last new client I had in peak performance coaching was somebody who had been choking at that and needed some help with that. So to create a system to fully engage deliberate practice and sustain performance flow no matter what, that's what we do with each client. And sometimes it's simply a question they may not have articulated in this bolder way. Why does someone fail to perform at their best when the stakes are highest? Well, we know the answer to that, but now we have a way to look at and facilitate an optimum performance. The mind and brain and performance sciences behind whatever someone does, behind human performance. So that is most important. And understanding why someone may not perform at their best when it counts the most, and how do people learn and perform complex skills, that's what we specialize in. Because we know about states of mind and optimum practice and performance. And it begins with our conversation with that client. And they're going to show us everything that they need work on, because it's going to appear in the process, or more rarely the content, but it's going to appear in the process. They have an obstacle. They're going to show you that obstacle. If you don't take it personally, you can hear it and engage it with the alliance with that person, because it's a collaborative alliance. Other thoughts or things that might be helpful to talk about. Is this, I know the those of you who sent in questions or challenges, we're not going to be able to attend. So I hope if this really hits at what you were asking, and if it didn't, send me an email, and I'll either respond back or wrap it into next quarter's discussion. Other thoughts, questions, those of you who are here, what else would be helpful to discuss?
Dave, this is Carol Huff again.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, I really appreciated the explanation and the example that you gave. First of all, with the ones who had been coaching, asking powerful questions, and then realizing that they, as coaches, are can use other means and methods, you know, to really give their clients the very best of what they can help with.
Absolutely.
We don't always think of, oh, well, am I allowed to do this? Or am I allowed to advise? Or am I allowed to share a story that they can relate to? So we don't always think about that.
Yeah. Who would be the greater authority to give you permission? Who would be the person to answer that question? See, I would say nobody, but I would also say to pause and to ask that question gets you out of the flow. Because the instant you do, you become an observer instead of on the playing field and immersed in the process. The example I think I gave in training is an Olympic gymnast. She noticed that the second that she would look at her primary rival at the Olympic trials, that's when she got out of her flow, so she had to work at finding a way to stay immersed in that performance flow. And she did. And that's, you know, if you stop and think about something, that's a choke. Not to be pejorative, but it gets you out of the flow.
Right.
Choke comes from, in I think it's 53, Jackie Robinson was called out, a mistaken call by umpire Bill Wallace, and he turned and grabbed his throat at the umpire as this gesture. Now, he was thrown out of the game, but forever choke became the term that he originated for when you blow it and make a mistake and get out of flow.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
it explains a lot.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And it helps you realize where it came from and why it can be something that we as coaches need to be aware of and pass that on, you know, that and just be aware of with our client coaching relationships.
Yeah, exactly. And there are a couple of questions that we, without thinking about it, thankfully, I think, ask ourselves as we're a couple of practical questions as we're engaging with a client. Would the client benefit? And can the client change the outcome?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer to either of those are no, then we reframe it to something the client can benefit from and something they can do something about and be effective in doing.
Right. So, you know, among other things, and so this kind of scares me because I haven't been doing a lot, is am I going to be flexible enough as a coach to take advantage of the signals that the client is giving me? And to be aware of them.
To know to ask is half the answer. The other half is just doing it.
So don't choke, right?
Yeah, there's no need to move to the observer's platform because there's nothing to observe when you're immersed.
Right.
When you're totally immersed, you're in the flow and you're focused on the co-created story and the client and their experience. You've entered that flow by the mindset that we have as coaches. There's a, you know, I would say a Texas two-step. One is we get empathically immersed with the client's experience and then reflect back to the client to be sure that we're engaged in order to frame it to look at what can be most productive. That's pretty simple. But sometimes it's hard, and I sometimes get into the content so quick. This is the most common issue that I see again and again new coaches having in the coach-to-coach sessions at say, CTA, where I still do training, is they will remember to ask what the client wants to focus on specifically. And then the client talks about some content, and they may forget one or two of the next things. What they may forget, because they get interested in the content, is they forget to ask what the destination is, or they fail to empathically resonate with the client. Somebody says, well, I'm really upset because I need to make this immediate decision, and da da da, and then you're into the content. Rather than, you know, I hear how upsetting or preoccupying that can be. Let's look together at whatever. So to empathically resonate, because that's how, remember when I had you guys draw the circle and the stick figure, that's how you get in the circle, that stick figure
right.
to your client, is to empathically resonate, and then you can go someplace new together. And,
right.
and that's why it's hard. If you think about it, I just had this discussion. And I admitted, this sounded like we reversed roles. My wife is home from her place in Bryan College Station. She's in her gun lap of a PhD. And I say, you know, that sounds just like how difficult it is to stay in the flow of focusing on breathing, you know, breathing in, breathing out, instead of tracking
uh-huh.
thought. Because the inclination, I can do it for a minute or two, but even me, I mean, that's, she said, well, your brain is always looking for something new. And I said, wait a minute, that's my line. That's exactly our brains look for the stimulation of what's next. And you,
yeah.
quote Stephen King, and all a writer has to do, and this is for you, Carol, all a writer has to do is to keep the reader asking what happens next.
Yeah.
Page
yeah, yeah.
page,
okay.
book
and,
after
and
book.
I, and
what
I
happens
forget
next?
That.
That's the dopamine.
I forget that.
I know, me too. Because this thought seems way more intriguing than my breath, and I'm off to the races. So it takes work. It takes discipline. It takes focus. It takes having a system and sticking with that system no matter what.
Okay. It does. It does.
Questions, comments, things you'd like to add or ask? Anything else? I didn't plan to talk most of this time. We've got maybe 5-6 minutes left. What else would be helpful to you? Anyone? There was a question about, or let me just bring you up to date. The training for, can I get a background noise for the dog in the background?
Yes, give me just a minute here.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, sure.
That was me.
Thanks. There's a revision, and I know some of you who are on the call have done the training because the first cohort was all 100% people who had done the New Life Story Wellness Training and the New Money Story Mentor Training. The group, the first cohort who did the NeuroMentor Institute of Peak Performance Training to become a peak performance coach. We had a terrific time. We just ended that. What I'm doing is converting that training to an all online and virtual training, with one exception. All three playbooks for coaches and players, and remember this, throughout the playbooks and the seven training webinars, coach is the shorthand that refers to the person mentoring, coaching, training, or teaching performance optimization in a variety of settings, individual or group, working with a client. The term player is the shorthand for the client, the mentee, the team member, or the protege. So read it in that way even when you read the overview of it. And you can see the table of contents at the page www.neuromentorinstitute.com. That new training, will be posted very shortly for an all online. The playbooks are all immediately downloadable. The seven training webinars are downloadable. And the seven Zoom discussion groups are also going to be downloadable or accessible online. There'll be one longer live discussion group to integrate and utilize the material into the training, but it's basically self-paced, and it's going to be set up to be more like the training you're familiar with three equal payments, and the next cohort, at least, will be just mentor coaches, and I will send out a note when that's ready to go, because if everybody begins at roughly the same time, though there's no official start date, if everybody begins roughly at the same time, you'll be basically in the same place for the live discussion group to optimize that. So if there are any questions about that, fire me an email, but I'll notify this group first, so that if the cohort is filled, it will be with this group, with material you're sort of familiar with, but then an extension and an application in new arenas before anyone else is notified. So anything else that would be helpful from me before we stop? Anything else you'd like me to do or send you or anybody else want to add anything? Anything goes now. We're in the last couple of minutes. This is a two-minute warning. Anything goes. What do you want to say, add, or ask? I want to thank you each for your input before we began, and for those of you here, this is also recorded. I will send the recording around to everyone. Thanks so much for one of my favorite times and all of your valuable input and interaction that really makes this possible. So, again, if there's anything that I can do for any of you, I hope you'll let me know, and I'll be eager to do so. Thank you so much, and it was a pleasure and privilege, and we'll meet again next quarter, and I'll send a note to ask what your most useful format, focus, or agenda would be so that it's optimally beneficial to you. And I will send that webinar around very shortly as a bonus to the group. Oh, the other thing we still have, and I offer this complimentary to this group, where the usual fee is like $149, I think. There are four more teleseminar series coming up. One begins May 10th, Coaching Money Mastery. Another is Successful Navigation of Change and Transition, Mind, Brain, and Behavior Strategies. That begins June 7th. They're each Monday evenings, 7 Eastern, 1 hour. And another is on neural marketing. There's a series of three flip books, but this is a live course with an annotated outline and resources. The last is the neuroscience of strategic change, and that's November 8th. So those will all be something you'll get an invitation and backdoor access to the Bridgeline and the recordings and the downloads of the outlines and resource guides usually for each. So thank you very much. Let me hear from you. I'm eager to hear. Thanks very, very much, and especially to those of you attending live. I hope we got to your important question. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thank
now.
You, David.
Take good care of yourselves. See
thank
you guys.
You.
Thank you.
Best of days.
See you guys.
Bye for now.
Hey, bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey.
Bye.